You're listening to the Live Free Now podcast, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. And now your host, John Bush. And we're live. This is John Bush with the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live free and prosperous life, free, prosperous, and healthy life. And today we're going to be talking about activism, liberty activism, specifically activism for those folks that are looking to create a free society where human beings are able to live their life according to their own ends, their own values, and not be harmed by other people, not have coercion, institutional coercion, where they're forced to do things against their will by elected and unelected people. And we're going to differentiate two different paths that people can take in order to achieve a free society: political activism, whether it's lobbying, getting people elected, pushing for bills, voting, or agorism, which is not about competing within the system. It's about competing with the system. Agorism is revolutionary market anarchism, and it was first iterated by Samuel Edward Konkin III in the New Libertarian Manifesto. So we're going to talk about all those things. I got a studio that I'm working on building out, just put up some soundproofing. I got this curtain here behind me for the viewing audience. So let me know how it sounds. Let me know how things look there in the comments. We are going to be taking your comments and questions as we go as well. I want to invite you to subscribe to the podcast. There in the show notes, you can see we're on Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iTunes, all that good stuff. And then I'd also invite you to follow me on social media, especially the alternative social media accounts. I recently set up MeWe, Parler, Float, which is run by some fellow voluntarists and crypto folks, and Minds. There doesn't seem to be a lot of action on Minds, but the other ones seem to be hopping quite a bit. And I want to invite you to subscribe to our newsletter. So get this, we haven't been able to broadcast on this channel, the Conscious Resistance Network. It's one of the channels we're live streaming to for over a week because some of our friends in India, they're publishing some content about masks and they're freedom activists in India, and their stuff was going really viral. And we got a ding on the YouTube channel because it goes against World Health Organization guidelines. So I want to strongly encourage you to follow me on those alternative social media channels, to subscribe to the newsletter and check us out. So, and again, this is going to be posted as a podcast as well, the livefreenow.show. You can subscribe to the podcast if you prefer the audio version, or of course, we'll always be rocking and rolling here on the video. Quick note from our sponsor, Brave Botanicals. It's Kratom and CBD. Kratom is a member of the coffee family, helps people with stress, anxiety, relaxation, energy, focus, motivation, patience, helps people to overcome addiction. You can get a free ounce by going to freeounceofkratom.com, freeounceofkratom.com. Just pay $5 shipping and handling, and we'll send you a free ounce. If you're tuned in through the Conscious Resistance Network, go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com, bros with a Z, bros.freeounceofkratom.com, and the Conscious Resistance Network will get a little piece of the action. All right, we're going to be doing some videos later, so I'm going to be putting these headphones on, but for now, I'm going to take them off. So the topic at hand today is, what is the best means of achieving a free society? And I myself have been an activist for going on 20 years. Started off as an activist for truth, 9/11 truth, and exposing people to the idea that there's a small group of people that have been conspiring for decades and centuries in order to create a one world totalitarian government. Spreading that word, I learned about the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights and began to have an affinity for those things. I got involved in some American Civil Liberties Union activism back in college. Fought against Proposition 2, which created, which banned gay marriage and civil unions back in the day, fought against that. It passed in the state of Texas, but it was later overturned through courts and stuff. And, you know, when I learned about the Constitution, really started diving deep into that. And around that time, I was exposed to Dr. Ron Paul and libertarianism. and finally was like, ah, this makes sense. This is what I've been looking for. This is my political philosophy, non-aggression principle, free markets, people leaving one another alone, right? Like Ernest Hancock says, there's two types of people in this world, those that want to be left alone and those that just won't leave you alone. And so I got involved with Ron Paul, the Ron Paul campaign in 2007, 2008, and really learned a lot about activism. And I was a youngster and had all sorts of mentors and everything. And that was great. And around that same time, I also started to learn about agorism and anarcho-capitalism and anarchism, was exposed to Murray Rothbard. And so shortly after the Ron Paul campaign, we created a political action committee called Texans for Accountable Government. And we had a whole lot of what I would say were legislative victories, but in reality, they didn't actually reduce the size and scope of government. And that's something that we're really going to hammer on. So we started this political action committee. It's still around to this day, but I started to realize that we put in a whole lot of work and a whole lot of hours and a whole lot of dedication and focus. And what seemed like a victory, like one step forward, in reality was slowing the growth of government. So rather than taking steps forward towards more freedom and reducing the size and scope of government as it exists, really we were just slowing its growth. So even when we took like a couple steps forward in that time, there was like five or six steps backwards. So I started thinking like, man, maybe this isn't the best use of our time. Maybe this isn't the best type of activism. And that's about the same time that I started really focusing on the creation of alternative institutions. I call them parallel institutions at the time. Alternative currencies, growing your own food, mutual aid, mutual defense. And this really became a big focus of my activism. So I want to, look at this guy. Not being a narcissistic dickhole would help society a whole ton. Well, thanks for the contribution, Skylar Rolex. I assume you're talking about me, but whatever. Go ahead and comment. We love the love. We love the hate. Haters make me famous. It's all good either way. So I want to focus in on a couple stories from my activism and relate how I think there's a better way to do things. And then I want to share some tips and advice if someone is to engage in political activism or political activism exclusively. I think there's some strategies and some routes that are best suited for that. At the end of the day, however, I do believe that if you are to only, or if we as a movement, as a broader liberty movement, are to only engage in liberty activism and political activism, I mean, then we are doing ourselves a great disservice. Because most political activism is reactionary in nature, in that people get involved to either roll back existing state institutions, which is reacting to the government overreach that's already there, or people get involved in stopping greater overreach, which is, again, reacting. I think what we need to do is adopt a proactive approach to activism, whereby we set big goals. A lot of people just focus on the election of the day, the issue of the day. They are steered, even though people, you know, want to be all awake and woke. Really, they're still steered by the politics of the day or the issues of the day, whether it's COVID-19 activism or BLM or whatever. And so if we really want to make change, we have to switch from a reactionary paradigm to that of a proactive paradigm, whereby we are charting our own course. We want to have little pockets of free societies. We want to have a network of intentional communities. We want to have 100,000 people that are all working together for mutual aid, that are trading with one another, that are supporting one another, that are defending one another. And we're going to proactively take steps to achieve that. If you were involved in the Ron Paul campaign in 2012 or 2007, 2008, it was the Ron Paul revolution. And there's all this talk about revolution and a political revolution, right? Well, if you look at the root word of revolution, it's revolve, which is going around in circles. And I had this insight, if we are going to push for revolution, then it's only a matter of time before we're going to end up where we were in the first place, right? So even if libertarians take over positions of power, as Lord Acton said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it's like, all right, we took over Congress or the state government or whatever. Now we're in power. It's only a matter of time before that power is going to corrupt and we're going to go right back to the tyranny. And that's what the cycle of revolutions tends to be, even a political revolution as a tactic, right? Whereby one group of people overthrows the existing group of people and takes that position of power. What tends to happen, and this even happened in the American experience, is that the people that overthrew the existing tyrants, they then become the tyrants themselves. And this has happened all throughout history. And so back to why agorism or revolutionary market anarchism or creating alternative institutions that are based on mutually beneficial voluntary association, not top-down hierarchical state coercive power, by creating a new institution, we can adopt this new institution, abandon the coercive state altogether. Now, in a practical sense, I don't know that we libertarians or voluntarists will ever be able to rid ourselves of the state in its entirety. There are a significant number of people, perhaps the majority of people, although usually it's the majority that aren't even participating, but the majority of people, they don't want the total freedom and responsibility that comes with the free society. And so I've learned to kind of respect that or to honor that or to say, you know what, if you guys want to do government, if you want to elect people that rule over you and make important decisions for you, then you guys can do that over there. What we want to do is try to create our own institution, our own means of social organization and experiment with that over here. Where there's overlap or there's conflict between the two parties, we'll have to figure out what that looks like, right? Maybe we still pay the gasoline tax when we drive on the roads. Maybe we still pay the national park entry fee to use the park for its beautification or whatever, but we don't want to pay for income tax. We don't want to pay for health and human services, et cetera. So the point is, with revolution, with political activism, it's just going in a reactionary paradigm of circles. If we genuinely want to see freedom in our lifetimes, or at least in the lifetimes of our children or our grandchildren, right, we need to adopt this bigger view, a generational approach, not just the election of the day, then we need to create the alternative that can one day hopefully replace the state as a means of organizing society. It's through agorism that we can do that. So let me hit up some of your comments real quick, and then I'm going to hop over and share a couple stories of political activism where even though we had what appeared as a victory, in reality, it wasn't a victory at all. And I would describe, you know, effective liberty activism is reducing the size and scope of the state of government interference in people's lives and creating more freedom. I'm also going to talk about the Libertarian Party. I should have mentioned that in the introduction. I want to hop into Libertarian Party and that kind of activism. Brave Botanicals Kratom. Don't leave home without it. All right, let me hit some of your comments. There's a lot of comments coming through. Hopefully there's some friendly ones too. Growing your own food, protection, all the good things without currency. Why don't squirrels pay rent or send their young to school? Money is the greatest mousetrap ever invented. How does all the other species, including life itself, without money? There's a lot of people that are critical of money. Me personally, I like money and I want to attract as much money to me as possible. Money is simply a medium of exchange. Humans are a little more complex animals than squirrels and other life forms. And we have technology and certain wants and needs and stuff, but we can save that for another one. All right. Yeah. We'll get to the comments later. Let me go ahead and rock and roll on my points I want to make here. Okay. So let me take you with me on how I began to kind of realize like, whoa, maybe political activism isn't the best approach. One of the very first things, bits of local activism that we did back in 2009 was pushing back on the Austin Police Department. They were going to be taking federal money from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in order to train police officers as phlebotomists for DWI stops. What that means is the police officers want to be trained. They pull you over. And at first on the table was roadside blood withdrawals. The police officers would be the one to administer the blood withdrawal. So we hear this and we're like, oh, man, this is no good. So what we did, and this is what I believe is a good form of political activism. If you are to engage in political activism, there's some tactics that you can utilize. And one of them is political theater and street theater. So we hear that the police are going to be trained as phlebotomists. And what do? Well, we decide to dress up as vampire cops. So let me show you just a little bit of what was going on in the news at the time. And let me know if you can hear this there in the comments. You should be able to hear this. Here we go.
Naughty Boston City Council Member Bill Spelk. Could Austin police officers one day be taking your blood? Not if Austin City Council Member Bill Spellman has anything to do with it.
We're putting both the police officer and the suspect in a dangerous situation.
Spellman and his staff are working on putting together an ordinance that would essentially ban officers from taking blood.
Drawing blood, I think, is like fixing a carburetor. If you do it all the time, you're pretty good at it. But if you only do it every once in a while, you're not so good at it. And what we really ought to be doing when we're drawing blood from people is making sure that that blood is drawn by somebody who is a licensed professional.
Since starting blood draws, APD has used phlebotomists at the Travis County Jail and hospital staff to collect the blood, but that didn't last long.
All right, so that's just setting the stage there. The police wanted to do that. We actually ended up working with this Councilmember Bill Spellman, and we wanted to have a resolution passed that would ban police officers from doing blood withdrawals, right? Cops are always, and government's always banning everything that humans want to do. So we're like, hey, why don't we ban something that the police are going to do? So in order to get some nice media attention, we dressed up like
dozens of suspected drunk,
like vampire cops. It was pretty good activism. And we went on Halloween and we dressed up like vampire cops and we did this cool protest. Check this out.
Drivers had no choice but to give Austin police a blood sample, part of their no refusal weekend. But last night, there were plenty of people downtown who wanted to give authorities a piece of their mind instead.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, no blood for Austin Vale!
Dressed up in costume and marching across the Ann Richards Bridge Saturday night, Texans for Accountable Government is calling for an end to no refusal weekends. Executive Director John Bush, in his costume as a vampire, says taking people's blood when they've refused will end up costing the city.
So we think that no refusal weekends fly in the face of this transportation code, Section 724013, and we think that the city's just setting themselves up for legal action, unfortunately.
Sunday morning at 5, APD wrapped up another no-refusal weekend. In all, 46 people were arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated. 30 of those people were forced by search warrant to give up blood.
So they started doing these no-refusal weekends where if you refused to do a blood withdrawal, then they would get a court order. It was like totally expedited and rushed through, and they would take your blood anyway. And they were wanting to couple this with the blood withdrawals by the cops. And I want to point out one thing that we did. We didn't just say, hey, you can't do that. But we said, hey, there's better ways to solve this DWI problem. So we wanted to offer solutions to the problem, not just say government shouldn't do that. And I think that's an important thing for political activists out there. Yes, we want to rail against and put a stop to overreaching government, expansion of government. But at the same time, not only is it something that we ought to do to benefit society in general, but it helps create a backstop. It helps to create more strength for your position. So Mothers Against Drunk Driving is like, we got to pass this bill. We got to have checkpoints for DWIs. We want to see the police department get trained to do phlebotomies because we're concerned about DWIs. But we're like, hold on, what if there's another way? We would call it community solutions. Community, not coercion, is one of the taglines we would use. What if there's another way to do things? And so we teamed up with this group called Square Patrol that was doing some cool stuff. Check it out.
After they initially refused either breath or blood alcohol tests, one of those drivers charged with DWI Saturday night, 21-year-old Javier Barone. He lost control of his car near 35th and Crawford and crashed into the Alexia Gavella bridal shop. He then took off on foot, but was found across the street at the Randalls. Barone is the kind of driver APD sought to keep off the roads when they announced they'd be having a no-refusal weekend on Friday.
Some police officers, or Chief Acevedo, will say this is working because they've had an increase in prosecutions, an increase in arrests. Well, as we said before, what we're trying to do is reduce harm. That's what everybody's trying to do. That's why we have DWI laws. And again, we feel that the best way to reduce harm is to keep drunk drivers from getting behind the wheel in the first place.
I don't think it's necessary. I think that it's overkill, and I think it's a violation.
Blood draw protesters like Sean Fernando with the group Square Patrol says he respects that police work to keep the streets safe. His organization provides drivers to get the person who's drunk and their car home. But he says a police officer shouldn't have the right to take a person's blood against his or
Man, that was some good activism there. So as you can see, not only did we protest the police blood withdrawals, but we also provided an opportunity, a solution. So we could be like, we don't have to do that because we could do this instead. And we worked with this group called Square Patrol, where they drive to your car in this little scooter, and then they put the scooter in your trunk and drive you and your car home. Really cool idea. And as you can see, that was actually some really friendly media coverage. If you are to do political activism or even agorism and you want to put a spotlight on it, which isn't always good, you definitely want to build a relationship with the media. You want to have a Rolodex of contacts. You want to put out press releases. You want to be their little darling that helps them with some good, solid stories. And if you can develop a relationship, oftentimes the media will simply just regurgitate whatever it is that you have on your press release oftentimes. And if you can develop some friendlies, like we didn't watch that entire story, but that story was very friendly to our position. And we've had some other instances where we had great coverage in the media. So, but here's the deal. Let me finish the story of what happened. So we, for like a year or so, we did the protest twice on the blood withdrawals. We worked and worked and worked. We provided alternatives. We worked with Councilmember Bill Spellman to draft this resolution. The resolution came up for a vote to ban police officers from being trained to do phlebotomies. At the 11th hour, the City of Austin legal department comes in and says, we cannot pass this bill, this resolution. This resolution is against state law. They pull up this obscure piece of state law that says law enforcement shall use all lawful means to carry out their duties. And so the stupid city department, I guess it was smart on their behalf because they didn't want to have this resolution passed. They said, we can't take away this means of law enforcement because it's legal. We can't take it away from the police officers because they should use all lawful means. And to take away this lawful mean would be against this state law. But in reality, and this was like at the 11th hour, we didn't even have time to respond to it. And the council member that was helping us, he wasn't so passionate about it that he just wanted to take it up again. Really, what that law meant is that law enforcement shall use only lawful means, all lawful means. Every means of carrying out their duties that law enforcement utilizes shall be lawful, all lawful means, not unlawful means, right? Like illegal wiretaps or whatever. And so the ordinance didn't pass. The resolution didn't pass. Now, I will say, because of the public pressure, we managed to prevent the police officers from being trained to do phlebotomies because there was just so much mud on the face of the police department. And so many people were against it because we made such a stink about it with these protests and with this resolution and stuff. However, they continued to do their no refusal weekend, and they continued to get federal money, and they continued to ramp up their DWI enforcement. So while we did put a lot of activism, a lot of energy, a lot of money, a lot of time into organizing these protests, putting out the media, press releases, working with these other groups, we put a lot of time. We didn't reduce the size and scope of government as it was. We slowed its growth and slowed the level of intervention slightly, but we didn't create more freedom in our lives. Does that make sense? See the distinction? A lot of political activism is focused on stopping new, bad, scary things from happening, right? And so when we get in that reactionary paradigm and we're constantly focused on stopping the biggest boogeyman and the latest form of political encroachment into our freedom, then we aren't actually creating more freedom, which is why agorism and alternative institutions are so important. So I was still in this spot where it's like, hey, we got to do activism, political activism, Texans for Accountable Government. And like I said, You know, that could be chalked up as a victory, but it's an empty victory when you really look at it from an analytical perspective, like I wanted to do, right? We celebrated, we did some fundraisers, we, you know, patted ourselves on the back as an organization. But at the end of the day, it wasn't satisfying for me. I'm not looking for these little empty victories. I genuinely want a free society that I can enjoy in my lifetime, or at least my children can inherit more of a free society without all this COVID tyranny and all this crazy stuff. In order to do that, we really need to create an alternative. Okay, so the next bit of political activism that we did centered around fusion centers. And this is a huge story that really was a big eye-opener for me as far as my shift and descent into anarchism and away from political activism, right? And so fusion centers are multi-jurisdictional law enforcement centers that merge the local, state, and federal law enforcement information gathering and intelligence sharing capabilities. And if you follow this channel, or if you've been watching on my videos, you may be familiar with fusion centers, because recently it was discovered, thanks to the Blue Leaks hacks from Anonymous, that a fusion center report was filed on myself. Derek Bros was mentioned, as were Freedom Cells, if you're fans of the Freedom Cell Network, which we'll talk about later. Because I put a Facebook post and it said, what if instead of filming the police, we stopped and intervened and threw them out of our communities? That's what Freedom Cells are all about. Come to this meeting at Brave New Books. And because of that, this bully cop that I had a run-in with that arrested me, he put a report, a threat liaison officer report, into the Fusion Center, right? So this was in 2016. I'd already been doing activism against fusion centers since 2009. This is actually how I met my ex-wife, the mother of my two kiddos. She was doing fusion center activism in Kansas City, Missouri. I was doing it in Austin, Texas. So one of the things we did is we traveled all around the country visiting over half a dozen fusion centers. We created this little movement called Operation Defuse, and we exposed the fusion centers. We did open records requests. We visited them with open records requests while filming. We put on activist trainings, knowing your rights, how to engage in privacy and security, operational security, how to do these open records requests, and just encouraging people to be aware of the fusion centers, because people weren't aware of them back then. We even got covered on Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory show, which was pretty cool, on a police state episode, which later would get scrubbed from people's DVR boxes, an early version of the big tech censorship that we see taking place right now. Well, we come back. And the way that I found out about fusion centers, to bring it back to Austin and the activism story, is Chief Art Acevedo, who's now the chief in Houston, Texas, where Derek Bros is from. He was doing this interview trying to stump and encourage, drum up support for federal funds from the Department of Homeland Security to get this fusion center system. And he described this fusion center system where we can have cameras on the streets that can film and know when there's a crowd of people gathering that are doing things they shouldn't do. And I was like, wait a second, this doesn't sound good. Along that, a little bit before that, I was studying the Total Information Awareness Program, which, if you're like a conspiracy researcher or liberty activist, you're not aware of this stuff, you got to check it out. The Total Information Awareness Program was underneath DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency of the Department of Defense, where they do all sorts of conspiratorial, high-tech, Illuminati kind of stuff. And it was run by this guy named John Poindexter, who, interestingly enough, was, I believe, convicted of a felony due to his involvement with the Iran-Contra stuff. I believe John Poindexter, that happened with this guy. And he's the one that ran Total Information Awareness. And one of the technologies that Total Information Awareness were working on, some of them were the ability to take in audio, like from a phone call, for example, to digitally transcribe it, then to run that transcription through complex algorithms looking for keywords and analyze all that stuff. So that's pretty big. They were also working on facial recognition technology as well. So this Total Information Awareness Project, which has an Illuminati all-seeing eye. Let me see if we can pull that up real quick. Total Information Awareness. Yeah, this is it. This is some crazy stuff. This is like what fusion centers were doing. This is a lot of the stuff that we see. This is their little logo here. This isn't officially from them, but this is their logo. Look at that. See the all-seeing eye? And then it has a spotlight on Earth. Isn't that nuts? They did doing biometric stuff. All sorts of crazy stuff was coming out of this stuff. This, and then we see a lot of the technology is very similar to Prism and the stuff that Edward Snowden leaked out of the NSA. Automated virtual data repositories, face fingerprints, transactional data, education, financial travel, country entry, total information awareness of transnational threats requires keeping track of individuals and understanding how they fit into models. Okay, so I'd been studying this stuff, and then all of a sudden I hear our police chief talk about having this center, this fusion center that fuses this information together. And I was like, whoa, this isn't good. Then I start researching fusion centers. Also along this time, the Missouri Information Analysis Center, my ex-wife, Catherine Bleich, Catherine Bonadine now, she remarried, she blew the lid on this MIAC report, Missouri Information Analysis Center. It was actually shared with Alex Jones, and this it was called the Modern Militia Movement. And it was this report out of the Fusion Center that said Ron Paul supporters and people that have third-party bumper stickers could be potential violent militia members, right? And so she and her organization got them to retract that. They had put on all these hearings across the state dealing with the Fusion Center. And so I hear the chief of police talk about it. I see this Modern Militia Movement document come out. I'm a Ron Paul supporter. What's going on? Start researching it. Go on this tour with Catherine all across the country. Come back, and here we have the Austin Police Department is ready to roll out what they call the Austin Regional Intelligence Center. So we took action. We got deeply involved with the drafting of a privacy policy, right? We tried to stop it altogether. That was not successful. The city of Austin's getting federal money. They want to roll through this. They don't have to deal with their budget. That's another thing for political activists to be aware of. Oftentimes, the federal government circumvents the state budgetary agencies, their local budgets altogether, by offering up millions of dollars. They steal your money through taxes. Then they give it back to the local and state governments through the form of grants in order to take away your rights, surveil you, enhance the police state. It's like paying for your own oppression, really. It sucks. And so the federal money was there. They were rolling it forward. One of the things that we realized through open records requests is that the grant application, originally, they wanted the Fusion Center to engage in epidemiological review, which now everyone knows what epidemiology is with the COVID stuff like that. That's like the study of viruses and disease outbreaks, right? So they wanted this law enforcement intelligence center funded by the Department of Homeland Security to engage in epidemiological review. And there was also a component where the Fusion Center would assist in mass prophylaxis. That means vaccination, mass vaccination. We managed to get that cut out of there. So again, I want to point out through our political activism, we managed to shine a spotlight on something and slow that dramatic growth of tyranny, right? And so we worked together with the city councilwoman, Laura Morrison. We did press releases, we did events, we put out videos, and we worked to draft this privacy policy. Let me just show a little clip from what was going on there so you guys can see some of the work that we were doing, the political activism we were doing, nitty-gritty stuff, man.
In August, the Austin City Council approved using a federal grant to run the so-called Fusion Center, which will allow 10 local law enforcement agencies to share crime information.
And despite loud protests from civil liberties groups about privacy concerns, the center is moving forward. Shannon Wolfson is live tonight with new developments in this. Shannon.
Yeah, that center would be headquartered here at the Department of Public Safety campus on North Lamar. But at issue right now is that privacy policy in the works for the center. Opponents say the policy needs further review and is being rushed through the Public Safety Commission by some members of that commission. Now, we want you to watch what happened tonight right after the commission approved the privacy policy to be sent to the city council. Now, critics of the Fusion Center, named the Austin Regional Intelligence Center, are concerned that the sharing of information by law enforcement could lead to personal profiling and unwarranted surveillance. But law enforcement agencies in Travis, Hayes, and Williamson counties say the goal of the center is to fight organized crime.
Okay, so, yeah, the goal of the center is to fight organized crime. So, We managed to have included at the end of the day, at the 11th hour, we had a city councilwoman, Laura Morrison, work with us. And we managed to have included in this privacy policy language that says the Fusion Center shall not collect information or share intelligence of non-criminal information, right? So it's supposed to be this crime intelligence center, like Minority Report, essentially. But it should not collect non-criminal information of a political, religious, or social view, right? So it's like, okay, you guys want to use it to fight organized crime. And when someone robs a bank in San Marcos, which is south of Austin, you get a partial plate. You want to send that information to the city of Austin so they can be on the lookout for this car with the last three numbers on the plate or whatever. Okay, whatever. That's your prerogative. That's law enforcement activity. But we knew because of the MIAC report and because what we'd seen from the Department of Homeland Security, which back in the day was like right-wing extremists, Department of Homeland Security, insurgency and stuff. We knew what they were doing in addition to all that stuff. And so we wanted to stop them from spying on political activists. So we had that language included at the 11th hour at the city council meeting. The councilwoman pulled us aside. We wrote down the language. We drafted it. And we had it passed as the privacy policy. We also forced them to include this privacy policy advisory committee, which would have a community advocate. But we knew that because this stuff was unenforceable, there's another tip for political activists. If you pass some sort of measure, some sort of mechanism in order to hold government accountable, make sure that it has teeth. Make sure that it's enforceable, that you're able to hold the government accountable. And we knew that this was weak. There's no way to double check. Even the community advocate on the Privacy Policy Advisory Committee wasn't really going to have much power to go look into things. And then sure enough, the Occupy Austin movement sprung up a few years later. Remember the Occupy movement, for those of you that have been involved for a while? And it was revealed that the Fusion Center was keeping tabs on Occupy Austin activists, non-criminal political information. Later, because of the Blue Leaks hack, it was revealed that they were keeping tabs on me, non-criminal political information. And there's a whole slew of political activism and BLM and all sorts of stuff that the Fusion Center had reports on. So, spent a whole lot of time and energy, a lot of focus, a lot of time, a lot of meetings, press releases, writing, video, traveling the country, and we got this privacy policy passed, a victory. But in reality, the Fusion Center was doing everything that it was prohibited from doing in the first place, which is why the Constitution, right? Everyone's like the Constitution and they hold it up as some holier than thou document, right? It's just a piece of paper like George Bush said. It's just a goddamn piece of paper. George Bush said that back in the day. And he was right. It's a piece of paper with words. Government isn't accountable to pieces of paper with words. Government's accountable to people that are able to, you know, muster up some courage and go get in their face, or people that can insulate themselves through strength and number situations. But a little privacy policy rule book doesn't make a difference, nor does the Constitution, which prohibits all sorts of activities that the government's doing, even old Donald Trump, which all sorts of liberty, former liberty people seem to really worship. Now, let me take it a step further. We had that success. Somebody approached me from the Texas Motorcycle Rights Association. Awesome woman. She was great to work with. Well, the Texas Department of Public Safety, the Texas Fusion Center with the DPS, they had been pulling over motorcycle people that were in motorcycle clubs. Some of them like one percenters, which are kind of criminal organizations. Some of them just people that had patches and belonged to motorcycle clubs. They would pull them over and take pictures of their tattoos and their badges and their patches and put it in the Fusion Center database. So this woman reached out to me and she's like, hey, can you help us? We saw that you guys just had this cool victory in the city of Austin. So we went to work drafting a piece of legislation, a bill for the state legislature. This woman had connections with the state legislature, so she already had a lawmaker that was willing to introduce the bill for us. I got to draft the actual bill. So I wrote up a bill, and I made it super duper 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 strong with all sorts of teeth. And it like prevented taking people's pictures. It prevented the facial recognition technology from being entered into Fusion Center. Of course, it had the privacy policy language, non-criminal information, can't store or share non-criminal information of a political, religious, or social view. And so it got introduced as is. It made it through the legislative committee, or there's a committee that actually writes the law out to be put in, and immediately got watered down hardcore. But it did have that, it did require. So there's like 8 fusion centers in Texas. And ultimately what the bill required was that all 8 fusion centers in Texas have to have this privacy policy language. No collecting non-criminal information of a political, religious, or social view, which of course protected the bikers, because that's non-criminal social information, their tattoos. It's a social club. So guess what? That bill got passed. We testified, we lobbied, we got co-authors, we got people to support and sponsor. It passed. A bill passed that I authored, which was super cool, that would require all 8 fusion centers in the state of Texas have a privacy policy that has information that says no collecting non-criminal information, political, religious, social view. Well, guess what? Even though the bill passed, nothing ever came of it. By this time, I was spent, burnt out, getting on to other things. I think probably around this time, my ex-wife was pregnant, maybe with our first kiddo, and nothing ever came of it. This law passed, but the fusion centers never obeyed the law. They didn't even care. They may not have even known that it was passed. It literally would have taken me going to every fusion center, putting out a press release, holding a press conference, trying to meet with the fusion center director. I would have had to make a big stink to put a lot of pressure for them to even follow the law. And then even if they said, oh, okay, yeah, we'll include this in the privacy policy, then we would see who knows if they were actually following it. Just like with the Austin Regional Intelligence Center privacy policy that prohibited the collection of non-criminal information of a political, religious, social view. Sure enough, in 2016, they collected non-criminal information on me, all sorts of other activists that was exposed to the Blue League. So the point that I'm trying to make is engaging in only political activism far too often is merely slowing down the growth of government and tyranny rather than genuinely creating more freedom, right? So I said it was an empty victory earlier, and someone said, no, it's not. You're exercising your rights. It wasn't an empty victory. You reasserted your rights. And like, I'm hip to that. Yes, we're standing up for our rights, our Fourth Amendment rights, our First Amendment rights. We're standing up, 10th Amendment rights, against the government. Right. And it feels good. And we ought to flex our rights, because if you don't flex them like a muscle, they'll atrophy. Right. But the point that I'm trying to get at is like, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to do political activism our whole damn lives? We weren't constantly on the defensive against this institution of government that's just hell bent on taking our freedom away. You know, here's another example. This is some good activism. So if you are going to do political activism, then there's some stuff I recommend. So this was, I think, in the 2011 legislative session, a bill was introduced called Senate Bill 9 by this guy named Senator Tommy Williams, State Senator Tommy Williams. This bill, Senate Bill 9, would have allowed the Department of Public Safety to set up southbound checkpoints. When you're going down into Mexico, not at the actual border patrol checkpoint, but inside Texas on a highway, they would have been able to set up checkpoints where they could stop and do driver's license checks, search for drugs and stuff. It also would have allowed the Department of Public Safety to place a tracking device on your vehicle without a court order, without a warrant. Crazy, crazy tyranny. This is when drug cartel stuff was popping off in Texas. And there was this comprehensive bill called Senate Bill 9 that had all these different reforms and stuff. And some of them were extremely tyrannical and draconian. So what did we do? We dressed up like Nazis. We created this award called the Führer's Favorite Award. And we went to the state house and lobbied in favor of the bill as Nazis, saying, oh, you would make Adolf Hitler very proud for sponsoring this bill. And we visited all of the sponsors of the legislation. We got some great media coverage. It was another example of a political theater. It was super cool. Check it out. But I'm going to make the same point here in a sec, even though this was cool.
A group of activists showing up at the Capitol today dressed as Nazis. Yet they claim they were trying to raise awareness of several state Senate bills.
they say would establish driver's license, insurance, and sobriety checkpoints. Well, this group believes that those bills would infringe on human rights, something they say is more offensive than the swastikas they wore.
We understand that people could potentially be offended by a bunch of Texans dressing up as Nazis. However, we feel what's more offensive than us dressing up like Nazis is the fact that there's senators in the great state of Texas that are willing to violate our constitutional right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Well, they were also letting people know that several of those bills are scheduled to be heard Wednesday.
Oh, that was good. That was good. That was great activism and a lot of fun. And so what ended up happening is, again, a little victory. The next day, the checkpoint provisions and the provisions to put tracking devices under the car were taken out of there, right? So again, pat yourself on the back. We had a victory. We celebrated, right? We even wrote little fundraising letters and we were like, hey, look at all the great stuff that we've been doing as an organization. But I get, I'm going to come back to my point. It was a reactionary, defensive posture. We weren't charting our own course. We weren't creating strong, resilient networks of mutual aid, mutual defense, trade networks, whatever. We were reacting to the government's agenda. The government has an agenda to create total control, total information awareness, right? Total police state, total surveillance state on a global level. If we stay in their paradigm, in their story, in their narrative, if we keep on their path, we're constantly going to be reacting to this or that. Same thing with the election of the day. Oh, we got JoJo Jorgensen, the Libertarian Party candidate. Oh, she got 3% or whatever. Oh, we got net 4 years later, let's all rally behind this person. And it's like, man, it's not creating more freedom in our lives. That's why I was asked about the Libertarian Party. It's like, hey, well, what victories has the Libertarian Party had? Whether like the state party or the national party? And always the answer that I get is, well, we maintained ballot access. Well, we fought a bill that would have required higher fees for third party candidates. Well, we ran candidates in every race. One of them got 15%. These aren't victories for libertarians. This isn't victory. A victory is reducing the size and scope of government interference in our lives. A victory is creating more freedom. A victory isn't maintaining ballot access. That's not political freedom. And here's the problem, another problem with the Libertarian Party, which is a problem in general with political activism, is people have a tendency to water down the radical message of freedom, right? This is why Ron Paul had such a following and created the Ron Paul Revolution, which birthed the modern liberty movement. It's because he spoke truth to power. He didn't water down the message. Rand Paul, yes, he got elected to Senate, but he didn't have the cult following like Ron Paul did, because Rand Paul watered down the message. It was a little more of a conservative approach. The Libertarian Party far too often is conservative light, right? At least JoJo Jorgensen has more platitudes and is more philosophically consistent whenever she's sharing the philosophy of liberty and talking about markets and so on and so forth. But there's a tendency with candidates to appeal to the most voters, and so they water down the message rather than coming out hardcore. And so if there is to be a Libertarian Party, in my opinion, which is the original purpose of the Libertarian Party, it would be to educate people about the philosophy of liberty, right? If you are to be a Libertarian Party at the state level, rather than try to get everyone elected, I would play kingmaker. So I'd be like, all right, we're going to try to find the low-hanging fruit where there's an election that's a tight race between a Democrat and Republican. And we're going to get involved in that election. And we are going to go at it 100% with the sole purpose of unelecting the incumbent. So if it's a Republican incumbent and they've been doing a bunch of tyranny and stuff, and there's a Democrat running, you get in as a third-party candidate, and you just start throwing shots at the incumbent, just pounding on the incumbent. Boom, 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 boom. Then they get unelected. And you're like, hey, this was a victory for us. Then when it comes time for the state legislative session, maybe you've unelected two or three people. They see you as a kingmaker. And they're like, wow, we better take these guys a little more seriously. And then you focus on like one or two big issues, like legalizing marijuana or doing this or that, whatever. So at the end of the day, I'm going to start talking about what we can do instead, right? At the end of the day, if we get caught in this reactionary paradigm, then we're constantly going to be following the course of the enemies of liberty rather than charting our own course. We're going to be constantly reacting. And even when we have a victory, which is like, oh, wow, we stopped that growth of government. We're not actually reducing the size and scope of government. Okay. So what I think that we could do in order to create more freedom is to create an institution that genuinely protects those freedoms, strength in numbers, mutual aid, mutual defense compacts, trading amongst ourselves, cryptocurrency, barter networks, silver dimes that are traded in exchange for goods and services, right? We got to get out of the revolution, the revolving mindset, and one to an evolving mindset. Human beings, at this point in history, we have moved beyond the need for a coercive state. I would argue there never was a need for a coercive top-down hierarchical state superstructure that controls all sorts of stuff on a mass geographic scale. There never was a need for that. But now with the technology that we have, with the interconnectedness that everyone has, with the internet, we can fulfill our wants and needs and solve our common problems without a state. It's already happening all over the place. Cryptocurrency is a perfect example. Here we have a global institution, a global network that requires no hierarchy whatsoever. It doesn't require no coercive hierarchy, right? It has no hierarchy. It's a decentralized peer-to-peer network operating on anarchist principles that's functioning, that people can exchange value. A lot of people made a lot of money off of, right? And everyone has this fault and whatever, maybe it's the NSA, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, it wasn't the NSA, in my opinion. The point is, we have a working, living example of an international institution that doesn't have any hierarchy or any state control or even any corporate or company control. It's legit decentralized peer-to-peer. Why can't we have such a thing for the way that we organize ourselves socially? So what I would argue is what's more effective if you want to create a free society, then political activism is creating alternative institutions, creating them, proliferating them, furthering them, advancing them, growing them, spreading them, supporting them, encouraging the use of them, right? And that's what agorism is all about. Agorism is revolutionary market anarchism. It is not competing within the system, but competing with the system, creating entirely new systems that are based on mutually beneficial voluntary association, peace and freedom, working together. So some examples of what you can do, right? Agorism also talks about counter economics, the counter economy, which is the creation of black and gray markets. Black markets being those things that are expressly prohibited by the state, gray markets being those activities, those goods and services that require permission in order to engage. To further this kind of stuff, to develop black and gray markets, networks, peer-to-peer networks outside of the scope and the purview of the state. As we grow these, the idea is more and more people will get involved. We got our own food co-ops. We have our own medicine, natural medicine networks. We have our own unlicensed naturopathic doctors that don't care what the FDA has to say. They're prescribing unapproved food and drugs. Woo. We have our own currency networks. We have our own health share program, right? Everyone's like all worked up, like, oh man, Obamacare, insurance, premiums, force this, force that. And meanwhile, it's like, why don't we just, you know, I use a health share. Costs a couple $100. If I get in some cataclysmic emergency, I pay up to $1,000. Everything else is covered. There's no reason why we can't create our own decentralized crypto-based health share or whatever, right? What about our own form of arbitration, an arbitration network? We don't need the judges, right? What about our own mutual defense compact or our own private security agencies or our own training infrastructure where the people in our network and our community are all trained how to use firearms safely and proficiently in defense of themselves, their families, and their communities? Right. And so the idea is we start to grow these alternatives. We engage in these alternatives. We have our own organic food networks. We have our own means of communication. David Evans talking about CB radios. We're not dependent on all of the big tech communication networks or the AT&T phone. We have a ham radio network. We have repeaters of this, CBD, CB that, mesh networks for Wi-Fi. And all the while, we're happy, we're healthy, and we're free, right? And we're just over here shining, doing our thing. Not needing this whole other. And so that I'm trying to create some alternatives here, two different paths, political freedom, agorism. And so over here, you got two parties competing, fighting one another. Even the Libertarian Party are getting involved. There's like Twitter wars and nasty stuff. And it's like the Biden and the Trump and the Democrats and Republicans and like blah, blah, blah. And like all the Democrats are fed up. All the Republicans are all reactionary and BLM and militia stuff, Boogaloo Boys. And everyone's like, blah, 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 blah. We want control of this institution of government, or we want to overthrow these people. And it's like, blah, 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 blah. It's a bunch of shit. It's disgusting. It's pathetic. It's irritating. It's aggravating. It's frustrating for the people involved. And it's just like, blah. Look, just picture just shit, like literal, just shitty stuff going on over here. And then meanwhile, we have over here, freedom, cooperation, helping our fellow humans, no police abuse, no people stealing money from one another, calling it taxes. So we start building this up here, right? And the idea is we chart our own course. You have the Illuminati, and they're like, man, they got roundtable groups, the Milner Group, the Rhodes Scholarship. You got the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, the Rockefeller Foundation. And these guys have adopted a intergenerational plan, a plan that spans centuries. And they pass it on to their children and they carry it forward through the Rhodes Scholarship, right? Through the Rockefeller Foundation that can put all sorts of hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. And it's like all charted course. Right. So they have their Illuminati. We need to have an Illuminati of liberty for real, where we meet in secret or we just be public about it. We're just loud and proud. Here's what we want to do. We want to genuinely create a free society. We're going to tell you all about it. Or it could be secret with little secret plans. Right. But we need to adopt a bigger picture, multi-generational approach to liberty, not just JoJo Jorgensen and freaking Gary Johnson, or not just pushing back on this candidate or this policy or that policy. No, we need to say like, hey, what do we need to do today in order to lay the foundation for tomorrow? Tomorrow being 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 years. Okay. We need to think outside the box, outside the ballot box. Think outside the ballot box and act outside the ballot box. One of the things that we're doing along this line over here, not the shitty step over here, is we created a network called Freedom Cells, the Freedom Cell Network. Right now we have over 3,500 people participating.
Senate Transportation and Home.
We have over 3,500 people participating. And we are organizing ourselves into small groups that we call inner cadres to get together with around eight people. Eight is the number of people where there's most creativity, most effectiveness. It's enough people to have some ideas to get things done. It's not too many people, so there's infighting or there's a lack of group cohesion. So you organize yourself into these small little groups of eight, work together on mutual goals, food storage, firearms training, off-grid communication, encrypted communication. Then you encourage the creation of other groups of eight. And then those eight groups of eight form together to create a middle cadre. Oftentimes you start with like 20 people or 30 people. You break up into groups based on interest, based on geographic area, who's in the close proximity, and you work together. That's a middle cadre, around 64 people, eight groups of eight. Then you link up with other middle cadres. So there's a middle cadre in Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's middle cadre in Austin area. There's middle cadre in Houston area. We all link up to create a meta cadre, like the Texas Freedom Cell Network or whatever. So I want to invite you to participate in this network. You can go to freedomcells.org. I should have included the links there, but you can go to freedomcells.org, freedomcells.org, and you can join us and you can participate. This is what the website looks like. I want to show you what the map's like. And this is what I'm talking about. At the end of the day, we are creating the foundation, creating the infrastructure, creating the social organization necessary to one day replace the state as a means of organizing. We're creating an environment where people don't need the state for defense, for arbitration, for whatever. These are all the participants. There's only there's over 3,500 people, and there's cells and groups all across the world. So this isn't just like hairy fairy ideas anymore, or we're not writing essays or theorizing what can we do to create more freedom in our lives. We're out there doing it. And it's a very beautiful thing. Look at this huge pocket here. There's a bunch of people in the Houston area. Here's the Austin area, all over the world. This is just one example. It's just a mutual aid, mutual defense, you know, peace and freedom network that you can get involved with. So I want to make the point, again, to hammer it home. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do any political activism. What I am saying is that if you only do political activism, you're doing yourself and your progeny a disservice. Because if you only do political activism, then you're caught in the reactionary paradigm of the day, where you're following the lead of the state, you're following the lead of the enemies of liberty. I think what's more important and what has a greater chance of creating the freedom that we all deserve and desire is to create alternative institutions, to engage in agorism, to create local food production networks and trade networks, to encourage people to use cryptocurrencies, to not report it, to keep it away from the government, to use Monero, which is a privacy cryptocurrency, to organize with your friends and do skill shares, to organize defense compacts where you're going to get your buddies back and you guys are all armed, you're all using firearms, to join us in the Freedom Cell Network. And like I said, adopt a big picture. Right now we have 3,500 people in the Freedom Cell Network. We're only continuing to grow that network. We're continuing to get exposure for it. Fast forward 5 years. Let's say we have 25,000 people in the Freedom Cell Network. What if there's 2,500 people in your area that are all on the same page, that all have a means of communication, that all have a means, a decentralized decision-making apparatus mechanism where they can raise money, they can spend money, you can buy property, you can buy bulk food, all sorts of cool stuff. We got to think outside the box, outside the ballot box, and not be caught up on the reaction of the day. All right, I want to invite you again to check out livefreenow.show. That's my podcast channel. I want you to join me and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google, all of those things. Follow me on the alternative social networks, Zuckerberg and Facebook, Censorbook, Fedbook, FBI book, whatever you want to call it. They aren't welcoming to these ideas. So these ideas are flourishing on other networks like Parler, MeWe, Float app. Float.app is one of the best ones. It's made by crypto voluntarist folks. There's a whole lot of liberty activists over there. I want you to encourage you to join our newsletter as well so we can keep in touch with you. I'm going to hit some of these comments. There's quite a few of them. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and joining us in this conversation. So things are going great, and I feel optimistic about liberty. All right, here, Robert Bennett says, the revolution is an inside job, inner engineering. The external world is a manifestation of human consciousness and the lack thereof. Okay, yeah, I mean, our thoughts create our reality. I very largely think that. Different people have different perspectives on the very same phenomenon, the same phenomenon in the physical world, and that can shape the way that they view the world and, in fact, shape their world and their reality in general. And so I would encourage people today, everyone's focused on the enemy of liberty, the tyranny, the COVID, the mask mandate, so on and so forth. What we need to focus on is the beauty in the world and the freedom that we still have in this world and the freedom that we're getting in this world. And go hang out, defy, engage in non-cooperation, live your life as a free person. You're going to feel a lot more free than if you're just sitting behind the computer going to Infowars.com every day, banging on all the tyranny stuff. So yeah, government has to serve the real needs of people, including liberty and freedom. There's a lot of people that think the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property, when in reality, government has never been about that. Government, from its very beginning, foundation, has been about controlling people, has been about one small group of people furthering their position of power at the expense of everyone else. Murray Rothbard talks about the genesis of government when, like, the roving marauders and Vikings and the people would go in and they'd rape and pillage and steal everything. And then all of a sudden they realize, why don't we just stick around and control these people and tax them so we don't have to do so much work? That's what government's all about. Even in the United States of America, in this unique American experience, It was that corporation, the British East India Company, and these corporations, corporate chartered from the corporate crown that came over. They immediately established massive geographic monopolies, the governors, and they all had like indentured servants and slaves. They immediately started taxing and controlling people. And then even after the 1789 Constitution was signed, you had George Washington, at the behest of Alexander Hamilton, call up the militia to suppress the insurrection that was the Whiskey Rebellion in the Appalachian Mountains. It's never been about freedom. It's never been about protecting life, liberty, and property. The institution of government is about ruling over people. The word govern, government, govern means to rule over. So if that's what people want, they want to be ruled, then by all means, whatever. Just leave me the hell alone and leave me and my people the hell alone. Education helps prevent the wealthy, religious, political elite, or slave caste society. Education's good. Everyone stay smart. Stay educated. Follow everything. Think outside the box. There's been a debate about money going on the whole time here. I guess I should do a whole show on it. Money. Everything humans can do with money can be done without, obviously. The law is for the flows of money, which no community has control over. Money is the instructor, having no conscience. Money or life is the choice. That's it. Well, I have life and money right now. I mean, money. So the Federal Reserve note is different than just money in general, right? The Federal Reserve note is a fiat currency that empowers the U.S. police state in the foreign wars of aggression, the empire, right? Central banks create money out of thin air. That Federal Reserve note is then used for all sorts of entitlement programs, all sorts of war, police, not good stuff. But money as a medium of exchange is simply a intermediary when there isn't a matchup between goods and services. So, of course, you can always barter. Hey, I got these 12 widgets. I'd like to trade for your gallon of milk. I know that you milk cows. And it's like, oh, great. Well, actually, I think this gallon of milk is probably worth about 14 widgets. So let's trade. And they're like, okay, I have an extra couple widgets. Let's trade. Bloop. But not everyone always has a match between what they have to offer and what it is that they want. And when there isn't a match, that's where money comes in as a medium of exchange, whether it's conch shells, cigarettes in jail, dollars, silver dimes, cryptocurrency. I think that it's valuable for a global economy, even a local economy, to have a medium of exchange whenever there isn't a match in wants and needs. I personally, to tell you the truth, I like money a lot, and I want money to flow to me. And money has been flowing to me lately. If you think money's evil, if you think money is like we can't have money, we got to choose between money and life, then you're not going to have money. You're like dispelling money. You're expelling it. You're like, money, stay the hell away from me, right? And I don't know, a lot of people don't want to be super rich or filthy wealthy financially, but that's something that I have my eyes set on. I want to make hundreds of millions of dollars and use it to benefit the world and create more freedom, benefit myself, my family, pool in the backyard, vacation, private jet. That's what I'm all about. So we got a radical divergence there. I love money and I want money to flow to me. I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve note, I should say. But yeah, I could do a whole episode on money and economy and stuff like that. Law enforcement is a psychological state. All we need to do is improve the collective psychology by living in truth, which is neither left or right. Money is cheese to total control of life. Yeah, I'm with you on the psychology, collective psychology and stuff. Although I'm okay with having money on that stuff as well. Haven't you got the breathalyzer test there? Yeah, so earlier I was talking about the vampire cops. They have a breathalyzer, but you can legally refuse the breathalyzer. And what they wanted to say was, if you refuse the breathalyzer, then you're required to do a blood withdrawal. And that's no good. So, all right. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. If anyone's watching, they've got any feedback for me on the new studio setup. I got the just put this in today. It's still kind of wrinkled. I don't know how well you can see it. I might need to upgrade my lights going on in here. But yeah, this guy says, absolutely. Changing the dynamic of elections to target removal of incumbents would be an effective strategy. Yep. I was talking about Libertarian Party rather than just trying to run candidates and think that they have a great victory because they maintain ballot access. You could be the kingmaker where you go unelect people. You get people thrown out of power. And then whenever you come in to lobby in the next legislative session, then you have more power and they take you a little bit more seriously than before. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the Live Free Now show. As always, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. I strongly encourage you to visit our sponsor, freeounceofkratom.com. I've been sipping on it here during the show. Helps with stress, anxiety, relaxation. A lot of people take it instead of prescription pain medicine. People take it instead of Adderall. There's green, red, and white varieties. You can learn about it at freeounceofkratom.com, freeounceofkratom.com. And I want to encourage you, if you are following us on the Conscious Resistance, you can go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com, bros.freeounceofkratom.com. So Derek Bros and the Conscious Resistance will get a piece of the action. We can support the wonderful activism and journalism going on there. And then follow me on the different alternative media networks. Subscribe to my personal YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast if you like podcasts. We'll be releasing this probably tomorrow in podcast form. John Bush, peace and freedom. Thanks for tuning in. I'm out. Go agorism. Yeah.